Welcome to the Blind Bargains Cast. What episode is this? 115? Or is this 114? This is 115. 115. See, I don't do intros, so I don't have to count high. But Joe is finally letting me do this thing. I don't really know how I intro a podcast, but what do I do from here?
You used to do it a lot years ago. You know,
Joe's here.
Yeah.
And there's going to be other people here too. You know what? We weren't done talking iOS. Of course, iOS 11 is released. Many of you may have downloaded it. If you have not, well, you might want to listen to the rest of this podcast first and see if it is the best thing to do right now. Scott and Jamie are back through the miracle of audio tape. And we'll bring them back on to talk about, you know how these things go. So we're going to do some more iOS 11. In fact, I'm going to do a live iOS 11 tip that might blow up catastrophically. We shall see. Of course, lots of other comments. A little more news. And what else, Joe? What's in the last word there?
Well, you know, one that's a holdover from our newest barbecuer, Miss Mika White, actually had tweeted this out. Now I can't stop looking at it. So we'll definitely have something that's a little bit more positive when we get to the last word.
We went backwards because you did that and I did a musical thing that you may have seen passed around Twitter. But
it's
really
September.
Cool.
We're both starting to, you know, look for something new to do as the fall happens. And, you know, one of the things that you could do is brush up on your Braille. Or if you're not already thinking about maybe getting a new Braille display like the Brailleant, you might be thinking about that Victor Reader Trek. Yeah,
that's
Victor
true.
Reader Trek, which is still available for pre-order. I believe it is shipping in October, so if you haven't already run over to humanware.com or called them, you might want to do so, man, because that's going to be just as hot in our community as, say, an iPhone 8 or X.
Thank you so much, or whatever, but thanks so much, Humanware, for sponsoring us this episode, and more details a little bit later on about the latest with the Braille Now Touch version 4 and the Victor Reader Trek and all those things. So again, thank you so much to Humanware for sponsoring us this week.
You know, when we don't do shows for a while of our quote-unquote normal format, the news backs up, and sometimes you just have to go over to the flow valve and release a bunch of news.
You know, probably, there really wasn't tons, though. There's some. No, I mean, no. I'm looking at this, and I see what you have here is the top story. I'm like, that's the top story? I guess that's the best we can do. I mean, it's actually not a bad story. If you live in California, Bookshare, the venerable Benetech and Bookshare, now free for anybody in California, similar to what happened in New York a couple years back with the New York Public Library. And now the same is available in California for anybody. Of course, if you're a student, you can already get free Bookshare memberships, which means 565,000 books now. Wow, that is so many. Remember when it was just 100,000? But free pretty much for anyone who is a library user in the state of California. Now you can sign up. We'll have a link on our show notes of how you can do that and get those free memberships for you in California. So
that's quite a few new free users. Latest was actually on Bookshare by Lainey herself. She mentioned it. And smart man, that Jim Fruchterman, because we've talked earlier in the year that they were having some issues, or at least thinking that they were going to have issues in regards to funding. So this may be the model for the future. The benefit of this is that it's not necessarily related to the blind and low vision community. It's reaching out more and more. And you see this in their press releases and
people who read differently is how they word it now.
Yeah, exactly. So they're definitely being more inclusive, adding more people to the tent, which is a good way to stay around rather than being focused within specific notches of the disability community.
I'm looking at what I want to read for the latest books. You know, they have a whole bunch now of the Uncle John's bathroom readers.
Oh.
Have you familiar with those?
Very minutely.
I guess this doesn't apply a lot to blind people. So I know a lot of friends who get these. They are books that you would, well, read in the bathroom with little short stories about whatever. So you have Uncle John's Unstoppable Bathroom Reader or Uncle John's Briefs, which I guess fits in with the bathroom theme.
That makes perfect sense, yes. Like the Reader's Digest version of stories, right?
Yeah, kind of, but like a lot of it's weird facts, and you can follow at Bathroom Reader on Twitter and get some of that stuff as well. But, you know, so all sorts of just random stuff that you can get
on, say, a Braille display. Maybe you have a small tablet, and you're reading them on a El Braille, which is now shipping, or maybe
you could do that.
Focus, which is also shipping. And you might be
driving that
Braille display with the new JAWS 2018 public beta.
That's now available as well. Hey, it's not JAWS 19, right? And
no.
In case you missed this, it is JAWS 2018. The public beta is now out with some of the latest features. Edge support, hey, we knew that was coming, and it seems to be mostly there as well. And by the way, and I give VFO Freedom Scientific credit for this, the Edge support, they will back port to JAWS 18 as well as JAWS 2018. So you'll get a lot of that as well.
Freedom Scientific also released a new video magnifier, the Ruby 7 HD Plus something or other. Okay, basically what it is there's some new optics within the Ruby handheld magnifier line in the 7-inch model. We have a link in the show notes over to the specific page. This was something that I guess they had sort of talked about a little bit earlier in the year. We've seen updates to the Onyx line. We've seen distance cameras come into play. And of course, we've still seen some new things coming out of the compact line from the Optilec side. But Freedom Scientific has been known for doing the Ruby handhelds for years. They're very well built. They're very solid. They have a good balance to them. Some handheld video magnifiers, if you've heard me talk to people in the past at CSUN or at NFB or ACB, you've heard me call it a divining rod. Some of the early video magnifiers were on these little sticks, like almost popsicle sticks, and the weight of the camera and the screen made it point down to the ground. And so it was like you were looking for water rather than trying to read. Ruby never really went that way. It actually had a big, well, kind of a fatter handle, and it was easier for people who were elderly to hold because it was a little bit better for its counterbalance. Well, 7 inches is going to be a little different than a 5-inch screen, but those old Ruby units are still available, and it looks like the new things that are happening to the Ruby line are good for those of us who want video magnifiers with darker bezels. Because a lot of the newer handheld magnifiers, you've heard Shelley and I talk about this on previous episodes, are white or kind of a cream color on the bezel, and that can really draw your eye away from it if you have certain types of things like diabetic retinopathy or glaucoma like myself.
It's good. I'm glad that you explained a lot of that, because every time I see one of these new video magnifiers, I'm like, it's really sometimes hard to differentiate what the new feature or improvement is with these things. So really good to figure some of that out. By the way, we had an email that came in a little while ago regarding the L Braille and the Focus 40s. So this was from John Gassman. We were wondering about the Focus 40, the fourth gen versus, I guess this is now the fifth gen. I didn't realize there's been that many generations, but I guess if you count the USB ones. But anyway, the brand new Focus 40 will work like the 14 with the L Braille, in that you can get the 40 and it will pop into the L Braille.
Ah.
If you have the fourth gen, which is the previous Focus 40 Blue that's been out up until a month or two ago, that one you have to send into Freedom Scientific, and you can turn it into an L Braille, but that is a one and done deal. So one of the advantages to the new Focus 40 Blue is that you can detach it just like you can with the current 14. So there you go. That's one of the differences to note, especially if you're thinking about doing the L Braille deal.
So if you want to mate your devices rather than pack them in, you want to go with the...
Well... Yeah, okay. Well played. Right. I mean, that's definitely, that would be a big deal. And to be able to detach them is certainly, changes that dynamic quite a bit. Because,
DNS, TNS, you know, yes, I agree wholeheartedly. It's good in order for you to have those opportunities to be able to split them apart. That's a selling point, of course, especially if you want to change the head unit, like change out the brains of the situation with the L Braille and move it upwards. Or maybe, you know, want to be able to take that 14 Braille display and put it onto something else like your computer, maybe not use the L Braille unit. So the flexibility is the key.
I've got no segue at all.
No, not for Redboxing?
Not to Redbox. I mean, what are you going to be sitting there reading your Braille display while someone else is watching a movie? You don't like it at all?
Sure, you could totally do that. Absolutely. You could definitely be charging your L Braille while you're going out to rent a movie at Redbox.
It's a pretty weak segue, but you know, we're going to take it. Well, the previous Redbox settlements were pretty weak as well. Now, this has been going on for a while, but we really haven't talked about it much here. There was a settlement that was originally produced. Well, there's been a couple. One back in California in 2014 with the Lighthouse that says that Redbox has to make their kiosk accessible. Redbox being a place where you can go and rent these things called DVDs that some people might actually still use in their DVD players that some people might still have. So, you know, we can talk about whether the technology is modern or not, but it was not accessible. So they had an agreement to make this stuff accessible in California. Then comes in Carson Lynch, which is a law firm. Well, they've been, these are the ones that that Hofstadter has called the ADA trolls, and probably for good reason. Not the world's most favorite law firm. And they sued and for a settlement to try to make it accessible in the rest of the country. But the problem with that was that the original settlement pretty much said, oh yeah, we'll make it accessible by just having a headphone jack, and then people can like be connected to this remote assistance service for accessibility.
Okay.
And Carson Lynch was going to be okay with that until a whole bunch of people, including myself, objected to this. And now there's an improved version, which says that they're going to have to make kiosks accessible around the country. So by the time they're made accessible, nobody will have a DVD player anymore. But
it could be Ultra Blu-ray. You know, you need to get 4K content.
They have 41 video games too.
Sure,
no, they actually have over 40,000 kiosks. That surprised me.
Well, are they also going to do Coinstar? Because that's where all this comes from. Coinstar owns Redbox. Well,
right, and then, which is, I mean, there you go. And that's a different. I'm not sure if it's a different company or whatever, but it's certainly not Redbox. So no, that's a separate thing entirely. And you're right, those are not accessible either. Redbox is niche, and I was trying to figure out because someone asked on Twitter who still uses Redbox, but their niche is cheap DVD rentals. You can get a DVD from them for $1.50, where it's probably five on iTunes or Amazon.
A
Google.
Lot of people who are uncomfortable using streaming services, or they don't have data plans that allow it, or they're
on a budget. Families on a budget
from the neighbor. Mm-hmm. So there also is a need for 4K or higher Blu-ray. So if you have a very low bandwidth and you want to do high definition of 1080p or higher, then yeah, you're going to rent a disc because the data streams right off of it onto your television and it looks a lot better for cord cutters, especially who are giving up not just cable television, but, you know, going just cell phone only and living off their data plan. Then renting a disc is probably still more favorable for them.
Well, again, we're kind of jumping all over the place in news because just random things have happened over the past couple of weeks. And this just came out this week, starting with some posts in AppleVis. I'm not going to kid yourself with a segue to say, well, you might be working on your company's projects while watching a movie. Well, maybe.
While watching a movie? Oh, no, I love this plan. This is good.
You probably haven't heard of a software called Asana unless you're really deep into small business and companies and try to use it and realize it wasn't accessible. It's one of the apps that does project management. So if you're a small company, you might use it for collaboration. Now, there's Slack, which mostly does chat. There's others that focus more on tasks and management projects. And Asana is one that kind of tries to do a little bit of everything. It's pretty much a replacement for email. And if you're in a company or a team, it would be a possible way that you could use it to manage projects and tasks and things. That actually, there's a free version, so we might look at it, and Joe might use it in 3 years from now.
Yeah, sure. Going to jump right on. I just got over Salesforce. You know, I'm still having flashbacks to that, man. That was, eesh.
Well, this is actually accessible now with VoiceOver. Well, the at least they claim the latest version with iOS 11, the web version's improving as well. So if you're in an area where your business team is trying to manage projects, or maybe they're using somebody else's software that's not working so well, you can now go to your company and say, hey, we have this one's accessible. And by the way, did a bit of research on this. It's used by 25,000 paid customers. So it's not just some fly-by-night operation. These are people that used to work at Facebook. And apparently one of the co-founders' dad was blind. So that's in part how this happened. So Asana. And I haven't tried it yet. If you have, let us know at feedback@blindbargains.com or tweet us.
CEO of Slack is talking smack about doing an IPO at some point down the road. That is when Slack will probably either blow up or blow out, one of the two, or someone will just come around and buy it and then, you know,
Microsoft
take care of that.
I mean, Microsoft Teams is already coming after that. But, you know, yeah, it's really good. Hard. It's good to see non-front-facing apps get a bit of accessibility, because it's great that Microsoft Office is accessible for the most part and your basic desktop apps. But if you're going to a company, you need these back office apps. You need Salesforce to be accessible. You need apps like Asana or Trello or Slack to be accessible. And a lot of them haven't been in the past, and at least more and more now. There's at least now becoming options that you can develop a suite of accessible tools to manage a business or be a part of one. So we need more of that.
With that in mind, you might have a company phone, and that company phone could be TalkBack, mm-hmm. right? Right? It could uh-huh. be Android-based. You could be having to use an Android phone with TalkBack in order to do your job. It's highly possible. Not everybody uses iPhones or can afford iPhones from the company standpoint. Jeffrey Stark over at Inclusive Android tagged us in on this and wanted us to promote this poll that's going around. I believe it's running until the end of the month. So if you have thoughts about Android and accessibility.
The volume bar. I wonder, does Google get this feedback? Sometimes it seems like, these are kind of unofficial but official surveys. My understanding that
this information is being shared, yes.
Being shared, sure. Now, being acted on, who knows? Now, one of the big things in Android 8 is a separate accessibility volume, which is cool. I don't have an Android 8 device yet because that's how Android works.
We're talking about 8, which is on very few devices at launch. Even the Pixels are starting to just now get that. And it looks like we're going to have Pixel 2s next month. So that's
true.
Interesting.
Even if you had a Note 8, you would not have Android 8 yet. The only way to have Android 8 is with a stock Android device. And you know how that goes. So it's coming.
What is that Essentials phone? The one that Andy Rubin was doing.
The Essential phone, yeah. Apparently, was listening to the review of that on the Screensavers, and they were not fans. It definitely seems to be a bit
very much clunky. A 1.0. Yeah.
Yeah.
A 1.0. Exactly. Refinements coming. Yep, that makes sense.
Hey, more research.
It's entirely possible to run into an employer that's going to go that way. I mean, Straight Talk is just now getting the iPhone SE, which...
Yes, well, they've had it for a bit.
For some people, that's really awesome. Cheap. For other people, it's not necessarily something that they're looking for.
At least
for.
Now it still gets iOS 11, and we're going to talk about iOS 11 in a minute.
Although there's a beautiful article up at Ars Technica about running iPhone 5S on 11. Oof. I don't want to do it.
Yeah, you guys have fun with that. anyway, more research, as I was saying. It's a survey of the week, or it's research of the week. If you live near New York, you could make some money, Patrick. Paid racing game accessibility research from Columbia University, who want to have you try out some racing games for the PS4. They don't say which. And they will give you a little bit of money, not a lot, but $25 for an hour and a half, which, isn't the greatest rate for a survey. But if you enjoy playing with this stuff anyway, it might be kind of some cool research to...
On a PS4.
Play with, and we'll link to that in the show notes and as well. So, hey, could be a little bit of fun.
Not our normal slather of news that we've had, but golly, we've had such a lot of it this year.
It's all Apple news, really. That's the thing. The big news, what the big news is. It's iOS 11. Yeah. It's Apple. That's why we're going to talk about that in just a minute.
I got spoilers for you. For next week, it's going to be more because got iPhone 8 coming in the house, got Apple Watches coming in the house, going to have Shelly Brisbane come on and talk about more stuff. Oh, yeah,
she's updating her book, of course.
That's correct.
iOS Access for All, the iOS 11 edition, which is really cool and always cool to have her on. How about an iOS 11 tip? And then how about a last word that's related to iOS?
There you go. It beats me crying about tvOS 11. That'll be for next week. But there's so much more to come up after the break. We are going to have Jamie and Scott back and talk about Braille and iOS and some of the good, the bad, and the ugly that Scott found with iOS. Remember that you can also find a lot of his work over at Apple Vis, and we'll have links to that in the show notes if you're not heading on over there already. All that and more here coming up on Blind Bargains Cast 115.
But first, let me tell you a little bit about HumanWare. That's right, this episode is brought to you by HumanWare. Last year, HumanWare partnered with Google to launch the Braille Note Touch, the world's first certified Braille tablet. The Braille Note Touch combines the simplicity and efficiency of the well-known KeySoft user interface with the power and openness of a mainstream tablet. Now here's how that works. You can use the familiar KeySoft apps to accomplish your daily tasks, such as document creation, email, or internet browsing, while downloading any accessible app from the Google Play Store. And once downloaded, KeySoft ensures that those apps are efficient to use with Braille. If you don't want to type on the Touch's included physical keyboard, you can type completely silently on its touchscreen using the innovative Touch Braille typing system. With school starting back up, you can use KeyMath in your math classes. This all-in-one system which allows Braille math to be converted into perfect-looking print math in real time. And by the way, if you have not updated your Braille Not Touch to version 4, it is live now and waiting for you. Just go to the Key Updater app to get that free update. The Braille Note Touch. The future is so close you can touch it. Now you can learn more about the Braille Note Touch or any of HumanWare's products by going to www.humanware.com. You can call 800-722-3393. You can also watch any of the several Braille Note snapshot videos done by HumanWare on their YouTube channel. And that address is www.humanware.com/touchvideos.
You're listening to the Blind Bargains Cast. Blind Bargains Cast.
Hey everyone, the gang is back together again, Jamie, Scott, JJ, and I, to talk about iOS 11. It's here, it's free, it's now, and you didn't have to buy any new hardware to enjoy it. So, you know, in the process of downloading it now, maybe you are, maybe, who knows, or maybe you waited. You should have. If you didn't, hey, you should be heading on over to applevis.com right now to read a whole bunch about iOS 11, but since it is now available, guys, let's talk a little bit about the good, the bad, and the ugly of the latest version of iOS.
Well, thankfully, I have been playing with this stuff. This is why Scott's here for me. And I've heard a lot of things during the beta cycle, of course, some which are public and some are more, which are a little more private from a lot of different people about, of course, early betas were pretty broken, but that's early betas. And there were quite a few this round, right? So I guess to cut to the chase, the question comes down to, is there any big showstoppers for, well, first you have voiceover users and you have Braille users, which are the two main categories. And if you know more about magnification, things like that, but I guess, hey, Scott, you've been testing this stuff. So what do you know?
There's a lot of good and there's some bad and some ugly, I guess, depending on who you are. It could be good, bad, or ugly. I've heard comments from the vision users that the bolding kind of looks ugly. I don't know if that's true. For Braille users, there's a lot of like good stuff in here. You can finally customize keyboard commands. So say, for example, I'm on a Bluetooth keyboard and I want to create a keyboard command that the Bluetooth keyboard has. I pretty much now have that ability, which is really powerful. So you've got both the combination of power of a Bluetooth keyboard and a Braille display right there on your iOS device. So from that point of view, as a Braille user, it's pretty good. The translation issue that we had seen ever since iOS 4, those are resolved, but, and there's a big but, I cannot lie. Yeah, baby got back reference. Sorry.
All right, yeah.
Any podcast we can have a Sir Mix-a-Lot reference, I'm all down with. So go ahead. Keep going.
So with Braille displays, we've got two issues that are pretty major, especially for somebody who types really fast. The issue with typing really fast is that VoiceOver does not interpret all of your input. So if you're somebody like me who writes at 70 words a minute on their Braille display, you probably do not want to upgrade in spite of all the other things that I just mentioned, because it's going to really just destroy your, you know, your productivity. So from that perspective, I would say wait, if you're a Braille user. Also, if you are somebody who happens to edit chunks of text bigger than, oh, I don't know, 6-7 sentences, not that any of us here would ever do that, but if you are, the cursor is a bit erratic when you're trying to edit. That's the best way I can describe it. Sometimes even slowing VoiceOver down. In spite of some of these really great things for Braille users, I think those are so critical. You know, if you can't and edit.
Especially if it's your primary form of access. Let's say that you decided that I'm going to do what Apple has suggested and do everything on my phone or iPad. That's kind of crucial.
Now, yeah. Scott, is this for Bluetooth keyboards or is this also Braille screen input?
It's only for Bluetooth Braille display users. If you're a Braille screen input user, you're probably not going to notice a heck of a lot of difference between 10 and 11, to be honest with you.
Well, you're probably also not going to be typing. Well, except does the translation thing work for BSI?
No.
At this point?
Does not. Okay.
No, it does not. Hopefully do it, but as of
now, so you figure this, okay, those probably came hand in hand. The way they implemented the fixing of grade 2 input somehow is slowing down the processing of characters, and they're going all Apple II on us, and they're just dropping characters is the way it's sounding.
Yeah, why don't they just give us KeyTalk back? Anybody remember that from the 2E days?
Nope, I had ProWord myself, which wow. I do remember down the 2E, you can only type one character at a time, so at least there's that.
Yikes, thanks.
Joe, no KeyTalk for you either.
That was scary, Scott. That was, oh my gosh. I'm having thoughts of high school term papers in my head. Thanks. That was, yeah, okay. So what about general navigation issues? Is there anything that's changed with notification or control center or anything else that's causing some issues with VoiceOver?
Well, the notification center is still a little iffy. They changed the way notifications behave altogether. You know, they've now got this sort of popover thing that they're doing. And I found it a lot more consistent now than it was way back when we started 11 in June. But I'm still finding sometimes that all of my notifications are not appearing. So that's kind of critical. You do have a lot of positives too, though. I mean, you've got the control center. Now you can kind of customize it. And that includes some accessibility options. So say, for example, the new Smart Invert, maybe you are able to use it on the web and you're able to use it in mail or in other places, you may not be able to do that completely because it's not fully supported everywhere yet. You know, it's still sort of a work in progress. So by putting that and a few other accessibility options in the control center, you now have the ability to more quickly not only use the accessibility shortcut, but you've almost have a second one in the control center in some instances.
Can you still invoke some of that with Siri?
Yes, of course. And Siri, I think, has gotten a little faster, but we'll see what happens now that everybody is on it. Now that the general public is on it, is it going to be as fast as what we've seen? With the Goldmaster, I don't know. I think that's one of those things that we're just going to have to wait and see how that ends up panning out. One thing I will say, which is nice, is that if you're someone who used the old Siri voices, you still have those in iOS 11.
Oh, good. I'm happy because that's what I do use. I use Siri voices as my voiceover voice.
Yeah, so you'll still have those available. They go by the names of Nikki and Aaron for the American ones. So you still have that, and you do have the new Siri voice, which...
How fine is Mickey? Is it so fine?
She's darling, Nikki, is what you...
Can we, well, why don't we can we leave this spot open? Maybe we can drop in a voice sample.
Okay. Fine. You want me to say stuff? Yes. Sure. No problem. I can do that. With my new, totally amazing hybrid processing, which includes both pre-recorded phrases and synthesis. I'm supposed to sound more natural or something. Brr. Oh. Sorry about that. It's cold in here. What was I saying? Oh yeah, I was talking about how amazing I am. I don't know. Whatever. I think I'll just go hide in the corner or something.
There you go. who knows what was in that space, but well, I guess we'll find out later on as it appears. But people love us when we do voice samples, so you know.
So Scott, are there any new voices from an accessibility standpoint? Can we do something besides Alex? I mean, obviously we've got lots of choices besides Alex, but what else is there?
Well, you now have the ability to make your speech sound like an Adam's apple, like somebody's got five Adam's apples, or maybe they've been inhaling a helium balloon. So you've got that, but you don't actually have any new voices other than that Siri voice was the new one, which is a little sluggish, but...
Oh, you mean I can't use laughter? That was such a great voice.
I know. Oh, bad news.
I want that witch voice ported over to iOS.
The classic Android conversation and Will from Afar.
Yeah. You know, that's the only real shortcoming, I would say, of the... speech is that the new voice that we have in Siri is a bit sluggish. Also, with the pitch change, it's global. So if you're using speak selection, if you're using speak screen, if you are using different voices on iOS with VoiceOver, once you change that pitch, it applies everywhere. So if Alex sounds like he has five Adam's apples, creepily, so will Samantha.
That brings a lump to my throat just thinking about it. Sorry.
Oh, nicely done. Please tell me this didn't show up to tvOS. Have we heard anything about that or watchOS? Are any of these voices also effective, or is this mainly an iOS situation?
It's more iOS. We had Alex introduced prior. I believe that was with tvOS 10, but maybe it was 9. But we don't really have any new voices on the tvOS itself. We do have other features in iOS, though, including those unwanted ones that we call bugs. One of those is to do with messages, meaning the messages app. And also the mail app. So let's say, for example, I'm in the mail app and I'm reading through my email and I want to delete a thread of messages. In iOS 10, I flick up, I double tap. If I have my settings configured properly with the mailbox, and boom, the thread's gone. That's still true to some extent. But now what we have in iOS 11 is sometimes, and not all the time, but most of the time, I would say, once you flicked up to delete, you're still on delete after you double tap and get rid of that.
Oh,
but not always. So you got to be really careful when you if you're using the rotor to delete messages. And, you know, there's some pretty nasty behavior in the Messages app as well, where you'll delete something and it won't show up as deleted until you go back out of Messages and back in. The workaround for that, of course, is to go to Edit, which is still there, and then you'll be able to double tap, you know, delete that way. But when you're using the rotor, you got to be really careful. You know, I think that's a real critical thing. You know, you could delete some pretty important information without meaning to.
Mm-hmm.
Is there still loss of place in the rotor? You know, like when you go to notifications and you get rid of two or three, and then all of a sudden it drops to words or characters for some unknown reason. This drives me crazy. I've noticed rotor placement become kind of off when you're in certain places in iOS 10. Is there anything like that sort of happening in 11?
Yeah, it's still jumping around, particularly in mail, but I would say it's more stable with regard to notifications. But you do have issues concerning the mail app, where it'll sometimes be on messages. It'll sometimes be on a new set of rotor options that we have called custom rotor, you know, the action custom actions instead of just messages. You've got a whole custom actions set of options for threaded messages. So, for example, if you want to reply to a specific message, you now have that in your actions rotor on each individual message. But yes, the rotor is still kind of, you know, a little unpredictable in that we don't know where it's going to end up. You know, a lot of the time it'll be, you think, set to custom actions, for example, and then it's actually on characters. So I would say it's a bit better. Bit more consistent, but not totally there.
And anything new, you just mentioned a sort of new navigation. There's nothing new to like item picker or anything really crazy that someone will have to get kind of accustomed to, or trainers will say, uh-oh, that's a chapter all to its own.
In iOS, no. In tvOS, yes. We can get into tvOS too if you want, which also came out. I haven't done extensive testing, but I've done some testing with it myself. Because I just only have so many hours in a day.
I hear you. And part of the reason why I didn't do this is that I'm Xbox testing. I'm doing alpha Xbox testing. So I kind of decided that I only needed to break one set of devices at a time in the household. So that's kind of why I didn't. But tvOS is important for those who are wanting to use the new Bluetooth connectivity. Or it's weird to think that you could maybe pair a Braille display up to a Apple TV and possibly Microsoft Xbox before the end of the year, which is just wild.
Well, that's kind of the cool thing with tvOS 11 is that you can pair a Braille display with it. And it works pretty well, all things considered. You know, for a 1.0 iteration, it is really well. It is to the point where I'll use the Apple TV, whereas before I tended not to because I had to try and listen, you know, to synthesize speech, which kind of gives me a headache. So you do have that now with tvOS 11, which is great because, like I said during our show last time, now I'm able to follow captions on the Apple TV, and that's working really well. You just have to be a really fast Braille reader.
What about navigation? Can you drive it from the Braille display too?
Yeah, not everything, but the very basics. You can navigate your home screen and if you are a Braille user on iOS, you're going to feel pretty at home with tvOS because a lot of the commands are exactly the same.
Yep.
That is awesome. If you can't find that stupid stick of gum remote, you can use that instead.
Yeah.
I kind of like that idea because you're going to have your Braille display next to you more than you're going to have that. Is the pairing process pretty simple too?
Yeah, it works just like it does on iOS. So whatever convention you follow for your particular device on iOS, you're going to follow.
And Apple's always been good at that. I mean, they're really good at consistency usually across devices like that as far as making that all work. I'm wondering, back to the phone just for a second, we talked a little bit last week about describing images and things like that. Have you been able to play with that a little bit, or looking at unlabeled icons, things like that, or if that feature really works, or how you might activate that?
Well, what you do is to activate it, you place your voiceover focus on an image, and then you do a three-finger single tap, or I believe it's VO with F4 on the keyboard. You can set it up with a Braille display, too. If you want, but I haven't really found it much more useful than what we've seen with the Facebook API and using it there.
It's supposed to detect text and images. That was the one difference that I noticed from Facebook, is that it's supposed to, if you had an icon with text, it would actually tell you that instead of the saying icon with text.
Right. And that's what I was going to say. But the difference is that if the keyword is if it realizes that, oh, there's text here, it will do an OCR on it. And it's enough to give you a general idea of what's there. The problem is it's not implemented globally. So like if you go into Safari and you bring up a web page and you focus on an image, you're not actually going to be able to do a three-finger single tap and then have that image come up. It's working in Facebook. It's working in photos. It's working in your camera roll.
Does it work for app icons?
I've not tried it, actually.
Right. So Android users have an app called Audex that will actually OCR icons, and it will insert the labels right into them if you have it or if it can recognize it, which is kind of what I was thinking of with this feature, but maybe perhaps it doesn't go that far, or it takes a different approach.
Yeah, I haven't tried that actually because I didn't know about that. So it's kind of like what I said in my article. I'm not, I've been playing with it, but you know how it is. We don't know any more than the general public in some ways.
But this is also happening locally on the phone. Isn't this local OCR? This is like on board. It's not like reaching out to the cloud to get some of this.
I'm not actually sure how it works as far as...
Well, how fast is it?
It's pretty quick. If it latches onto it, and then again, it's in a place that it's supported, you will get pretty quick results. It's a lot quicker than what we've seen with apps in the past. Pretty much when you go in there, the second you focus on it, if it knows it's an image, it seems like it just goes and does its thing. And so you have whatever it can give you out of it. So it's a feature, I think, that is still definitely under development. It's something that's not been implemented globally. And I don't know how they're going to make it that way, or if it's eventually going to be, or how that's going to work.
Does it come over to High Sierra, or is this mostly an iOS thing?
It's available in High Sierra as well. Do we even know when that's going to be released? Because
yeah, yep. No, it is. Yeah, it's the same day.
Don't isolate
pretty
that
much out, yeah. Friday yeah, the 22nd, which is pretty much what we expect. If the stars align, this is when it's going to be released the day of this podcast it's coming out. Then the Friday the 22nd.
Because I didn't get the latest version of the Mac OS.
Yeah, I don't even think they announced that there. It kind of was like, oh yeah.
No, the Verge tweeted it out. That's how I learned about it. Mm-hmm. Was the Verge said, oh yeah, and High Sierra is coming out. So, okay, cool. That makes sense though, because if you're an Apple ecosystem devotee, you're used to updating all your devices all at once. You know, okay, I'm gonna hit the Apple TV, hit the Apple Watch, hit the iOS and the Mac.
Well. And that's the thing, yeah. We're learning so much of this as it goes along. That's how, we do this thing. We get some information, we'll get it from other places, and Scott will learn stuff, and Jamie will learn stuff. And you can read about it in various places, like going to AppleVis, going to Blind Bargains, going to Access World and other sites, or getting on Twitter. And assumably, by the time this podcast comes out, there'll be even more information that we didn't have when we recorded it. And, so there'll be even more information and tidbits about iOS 11. So use this as one resource, and then of course go read the articles. You have your iOS 11 article up there on AppleVis, Scott?
Yeah, it's on AppleVis, and I also did some collaboration with the IBTC and one of the people working there with the NFB for the low vision stuff, because obviously I'm not the best person to cover that. So there's a lot of, you know, the visual changes, whether good or bad, in iOS 11 and how, for example, Smart Invert is rendered in various places. So there's a lot of low vision information there, too, in that article, along with the Braille and the voiceover changes. One voiceover change I want to make sure to make people aware of is with regard to drag and drop. Now, drag and drop.
I saw this.
Yeah. With drag and drop, now you have to double tap and hold again if you're a touchscreen user to bring up the ability to move apps around, what they call edit mode. With a Braille display or keyboard, it's still the same to get to it. It still behaves as though it were a rotor option, but with a touchscreen, you have to double tap and hold to enter edit mode. But I found it works really well. I took four different apps on different pages of my home screen, added them to what they call a drag session. You can make any number of jokes you want about that.
RuPaul's drag session? Is that what we just said?
Yeah.
Okay. No, sorry.
And then I took those four apps and dropped them all into one folder at one time. So that was really handy. You know, and all your other commands, or I don't know if commands is the correct word, all your other rotor options for, you know, placing it after such and such or before whatever it is, or creating a folder with the app in focus, all those options are still there just like they were in 10. The difference, of course, is now that you can drag more than one app around. One of the other changes that we saw with VoiceOver that was, I wouldn't call it necessarily a change, I would call it maybe going back to the old, is that in iOS 9, when you're in the Mail app as a speech user, you had previews being read automatically. In 10, that disappeared. You had to do a three-finger sigil tap to activate the preview. In 11, you no longer have to do that. So that's a minor change, but I think it's going to speed up productivity for a lot of people.
Do you find it being more verbose then? Or are you turning hints on and off? Or, I mean, where do you find it on the chatty scale?
It does the same thing like it used to do. You know, it would tell you who the message is from and all that, and then pauses for a second and then gives you the preview. I don't have it on because I'm a Braille user and I don't bother, but I would imagine it could get kind of on your nerves.
I never found it in the past to be verbose, I think because of the length of the pause. It's not horribly long, but if you're flicking through messages, if you hear one that you know you don't want to read just yet, you're not going to be interrupted by the reading of the body of the message in the length of time it will take you to flick. So I don't think that's probably going to be a problem, honestly.
No, but for people who use it, it's probably, you know, it's definitely going to help out.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it gives you enough of the message to know, even if you know, the subject's like, well, I'm not sure. Okay, well, here's the first three lines of it. So.
And that's the best thing about it is someone does a me too response or that sounds great. And that's all that the message is. That's enough that you don't have to open the message at that point.
Right. Or you get these people who do the one word response with the sent from my iPhone, which is longer than their actual message. Some of the other stuff that we're looking at here is we've got a new thing under voiceover settings called verbosity, which isn't new in itself, but it's definitely gone through some major changes in the sense that now you have the ability to have voiceover speak the status of text as it changes, which didn't always work prior. It seems to be working now. And the example I give in my article, I think, is a good one, which is when you're using, say, for example, Postmates, or you're using one of these other apps where estimated time of arrival is very important. Well, for me as a Braille user, that's not changing in some of these apps, but it is changing on screen. And before, I didn't have access to that information unless I flicked left and right, or, you know, space with dot one and dot four. Now it updates automatically, which could drive you nuts. Like if you're doing a recording or something like that, and, you know, the time keeps changing, but you have the ability to turn it on and off. So
our Uber and Lyft, that will be very helpful.
Yes.
Now, what about using an app like Twitterific? Will it do that or not? Like if you were at the top of a list of tweets and you just kind of wanted to hear them as they came in, or does that not work?
I had it working in tweetings, but the problem is usually you get more than one tweet when it refreshes.
Yeah.
But I have not tried it specifically in Twitterific. So
okay,
that would be good to test. It's one of those things. You just don't know quite where it's going until you see how it applies to everything on your phone. We've got other rotor changes as well. It's not showing up everywhere, but where it is showing up, it's kind of helpful, although I hope Apple will keep moving along and expanding this feature. You now have misspelled words as a rotor option. Again, not in every text field. For example, it comes up in mail reliably. Notes, sometimes yeah, sometimes no, and there seems to be no real consistency, but if you go to misspelled words, you can flick up and down to have the cursor jump automatically to whatever word you have that's misspelled. Of course, then you have to go to the edit rotor and go to replace and then tap the keyboard above it. So that's helpful, but I was hoping that Apple would kind of do like what they did with the text selection where, okay, my cursor is now on a misspelled word. Now I can flick right to get a list of suggested options and then double tap.
Oh, that would have been sweet. Oh, yeah. Where does your cursor land? Are you at the beginning or the end of the word?
Beginning.
When you're doing...
The beginning.
Okay.
It's not selected by default. The cursor is on the first letter in Braille. I assume it's the same. You know, yeah, of course, the rotor is not doing anything visually, but you'll see the cursor jump from wherever it was to the start of the misspelled word. And then that's some of the highlights. There's a few more that I could talk about. One of them for Braille users is now you have the ability to use status cells. We've had those around for years, but now they can also be applied to formatting. So say, for example, your text is bold as opposed to unbold, or maybe italicized as opposed to underlined. There are now dots available in this second status cell if you already have the first one enabled, which will tell you when your text attributes are changing. And if you use this, you have to kind of memorize them, but it's really handy because if you hit a cursor routing button above that status cell, it launches you into a handy little key that tells you exactly, oh, dot 3 is this, dot 7 is that. So, you know, for somebody writing research papers on an iPad, for example, that could come in handy.
What if I send you all the cute little stickers and iMessage, you know, fireworks? And no, I'm kidding.
I'm glad you don't have my number.
No, now you'll know I write in all caps.
Yay!
No, also, just kidding.
Wait, you only write it? You write in all capitals, so you're in Raleigh
It's easier for low vision users.
Yeah, you nice. Absolutely. Oh. And then I bold it, and then I put fireworks on either side. That way,
wow!
Stands I always right wanted out. The screen reader to actually. If someone could write a speech plugin that would actually have it scream if it saw all caps.
Yeah. That would be kind of cool.
There's an NVDA add-on waiting to happen.
Yeah, it would be there to do.
And Joseph Lee, get on that.
There you go.
The other thing that's cool with Braille is that you now, we didn't have this ability in Braille before, but you did in speech, is the ability to tell what emoticon you're seeing, whatever you're encountering. You know, with voiceover speech, you've had that ability for a while. Only now, with this release, can I read about every smiling pile of poo that my nephew sends me.
Now you can feel a smiling pile of... Never mind. I'm going to leave it alone.
Yes.
Yeah, nothing beats a bumpy, smiling pile of poo, right?
And that's how show titles are born.
At least that's much better than some of the other ones I've seen. I need to understand this one.
So I kind of want to, those are some of the highlights. Obviously, what will apply to you and what doesn't is it's just going to be, you know, depending on the use case. I highly encourage people. I normally don't do these types of things, but I feel it's important to tell people, you know, definitely head over to applevis.com, check out the list of bugs. We have them listed in from serious to minor as the editorial team saw fit. And you'll also find my article where there's other stuff that I didn't cover here. Some of the low vision sections are certainly
that's what applicable. We call a tease.
Correct.
So, Scott, I know we don't want to cover probably a lot of Apple's stock apps, but I am curious about a couple things. First of all, there are things I like about Google Maps and then things I like about Apple Maps. Have there been any significant changes to Maps in iOS 11 that would make it easier or harder to use from an accessibility standpoint?
I don't notice a whole lot of changes in the outdoor maps spectrum, but I did, of course, like everyone else, have read about the internal, the indoor mapping option, which is apparently now available, but I haven't yet ventured into a space within a device that's connected to a cellular network where I could use it.
Okay. And then what, if anything, might be different with Apple Music?
Couldn't tell you. I have not used Apple Music.
More you too.
Well, I hope not.
Freely downloaded.
I don't know that Hims would like that either. Wouldn't they rather have a Polaris?
Yeah.
Well, and some of those changes are going to be transitory because HomePod might change or add more flexibility or complexity depending when that drops and what changes around Apple Music. So that app could be in flux even as we're speaking.
It usually is.
Here the day of rollout. Yeah. Right.
That's the thing with apps that have dynamic content. Sometimes it just updates and it just, you know, you could wake up one day and while your buttons may be labeled,
Podcasts
some of the links might not.
App is a perfect example of that, actually.
They're doing a lot of Spotify borrowing on music, it looks like. You can share playlists with your friends and things like that. Things that Spotify has had for like, I don't know, half a dozen years now.
And Apple has taken the nod from Android to update those apps independently. Ever since they've given you the ability to move them or even in some cases delete the stock apps, they kind of update independently from one another sometimes. It's not always tied to a whole number or 0.1 release. Sometimes those things can sort of just happen. So that's one of those interesting moments where you can see some of the apps that are decoupled, like news or something else that could just, or iBooks even. Have a minor update and that could throw everything that you're used to in a tizzy. It just all depends. And that's another reason why you should be reading Apple Vis to keep up with the latest and hop into the forums. There's some great conversation that happens there as well.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those situations where sometimes people wrongfully blame somebody because they think that, you know, the app itself is broken when it may not be the app at all. Peapod is another example of one of those where the accessibility of that thing has depended pretty much on the day, because sometimes you'll go in and we don't have Peapod here in North Carolina, but I used to use it in New York. And when I used it in New York, my experience would vary from week to week as to how accessible it was. And Apple Music, to a certain degree, kind of falls within that scope also.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest part for people. And it's existed, you know, JAWS and others where, you know, individuals had to learn what was an Internet Explorer bug, what was a screen reader bug, and what was just poorly implemented code as far as accessibility went. So that's another reason why you should definitely look in places like Apple Vis when it comes to iOS and other Apple apps, because you'll get a good idea from people who've been doing this a while where the bottleneck is and how you can resolve it. Or, as Scott mentioned, some workarounds. Scott, thanks for stopping by again and give us the lowdown on what's going on with the latest that I've been downloading here today. Jamie, thanks again for hopping in and asking questions. JJ and I will be back after the tip, and then we'll go into sound off. And of course, the last word, all that more on Blind Bargains Cast.
Hey, I like doing these tips live. So here we go. Here's a tip about iOS 11. Go figure, right? We haven't done enough iOS 11 things at all. So let's cover one. Remember, was it iOS 9 or 10 or when they changed in VoiceOver how you can move apps around and they added some stuff to the rotor and it was all kind of cool and new and funky? Well, forget all that. It's gone. And now, once again, you have to relearn how to move apps around and create folders and things like that. It's done through this new drag and drop thing. So you can actually, well, drag and drop, but it works a little bit differently with VoiceOver. So let's, we're on our home screen here.
Photos. Photo booth.
Photo booth.
Double tap to open.
So we can double tap and hold just like we always have. And you wait.
Started editing.
Until it says started editing. Then you can light up on your finger. So now we are in the edit mode, of course. This is familiar. But here's where it's changed, right? So let's say I want to put photo booth on top of photos and create a folder. See what other options we have. So we can move around the screen here.
Photos.
Oh, there's photos right there.
Double tap and hold to perform move by hold and drag.
Ooh, you hear that? Double tap and hold. Now, of course, if you have the verbosities turned off, you aren't going to hear these things. So you could do that. There's also some action type stuff here, I think.
Drag photos. Activate. Drag photos.
Okay. So drag photos. That's what we want to do. So we want to try to drag photos on photo booth or one or the other. So it gets a little confusing, but we're going to do this here. Boom. So now we are supposedly dragging photos. Are we going to go with that? Okay. And let's see what we have here.
FaceTime is editing. TV is photo booth is editing. Double tap to add to drag. Drops available. Swipe up or down to select a custom action. Well, then double tap to activate.
Bunch of weird things that you can do. Yes, you can add to drag and like add to the things that you are dragging. You can drop it here. Let's see what we can do here.
Activate.
We're doing default. The actions by cancel swiping drag. Up.
Create new folder with photo booth and photos. Drop photos after photo booth. Drop photos before photo booth. Add to drag session.
Drag session, Joe?
I'm still saying it's RuPaul's drag session. Drag.
Activate. Cancel drag. Create new folder with photo booth and photos.
So there you go. That might be how you want to do it. Say you want to make a new folder, you just do it right there.
Drop photos app. Create new folder with photo booth and photos.
Double tap there.
Creating photography folder. Off. No. Wrong. FaceTime. Is editing.
How cute.
One missed FaceTime call.
We now have a new photography
double tap
folder.
To delete.
So that's how you do these things. Of course, if you still double tap on an app, as you hear, you would delete the app or be prompted if you want to delete it. And you still press the home button to get out of this whole mess.
Finished editing.
Finished editing, and we are back on the home screen. Simpler? I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's how you do it. I mean, it's, I guess you wanted to have the drag and drop experience, and now you can drag and you can drop and you can have drag parties all day.
And it doesn't have to be contiguous. You could actually just grab other files and.
Well, that's, yeah, right. So you can add to drag, right? And you can keep adding and create a whole folder and grab up a whole bunch of apps that way and then drop them all into one big mess of a folder if you wanted to, or do all sorts of other things. So there you go.
And then see what it tells it it is. Miscellaneous.
It's a drag menage a trois. Okay, send your tips to feedback at blindbargains.com.
It's your turn to sound off. Email feedback at blindbargains.com or tweet us at blindbargains.
Got a couple of emails to focus on here before we say maybe look at what's going on with the Blind Bargains Twitter feed. That's my little cue to Jay to run to Twitter and see if there's anything worth talking about.
No.
Juan Avila, who has written in once or twice. No, okay, good. has written in with a couple of questions before. He enjoyed our podcast on the Apple event, and we thank you for that. And he mentions that Apple is making changes that are to appeal to Android switchers, and that you see that with the larger screens. You see that with the loss of the home button. And he also has some questions about Scott and Braille, which we kind of sort of answered a little bit a second ago. If you rewind, you'll hear Scott talk a lot about iOS and Braille. Some of that he couldn't talk about, Juan. We recorded that ahead of time, and we were still under wraps as far as we could talk about until iOS 11 shipped. So we wanted to actually touch on some of the things you ask about in this email, but we had to wait until it actually dropped before we could. He wondered about the new Braille note takers as well, if they were okay for using in class. If you listen to our conversations back at CSUN, you'll hear Dave take the Polaris into Google Classroom, and Greg Stilson also talked about how you can do that with the HumanWare Braille Note Touch. Where you're stuck is just like any phone. Sometimes phones don't work well with some portals. I'm thinking recently, it was very difficult to actually get the phones and devices on the network at the ACB National Convention, so much so that they eventually just took the portal down. So you're still going to have some of those that are going to be cantankerous for any device with a screen reader.
But not the problems like you used to have. I mean, it used to be with Keysoft or with the proprietary browser on the old Braille senses. These were running pretty old web browsers, which had lots of problems. Now you're running Android. And so, I mean, it's pretty much, if your Android phone or anybody's Android phone could get online, then you pretty much should be able to with your note taker as well. So, I mean, that's certainly a vast improvement over what it used to be for Wi-Fi. Of course, you know, this could be a hang up here and there. But, you know, you do have a lot of advantages now that you didn't have before. And the advantage of a note taker versus just an iPhone or an Android phone is some of that specialized stuff. They're big on education. They're big for math, for reading and printing out math notation, for Braille translation. That's where the note takers excel. So, yeah, take the form factor into account and whether you need that type of flexibility when you're trying to go note taker versus Braille display plus iPhone. And of course,
I would also say come to peace with a cloud service, whether you're using Google Notes or Docs or Apple Notes or Well, more like Dropbox, you know, use Dropbox or something that you're going to sync back and forth, because if you're going to jump from multiple devices with multiple platforms, you need multiple ways of reaching it. So that means you have to have a non-proprietary way of doing something. So Android has a lot of those because it's so flexible and you can do different things. And it, again, if you listen to the presentations, you hear those individuals from those companies mention how easy it is to move stuff back and forth from a PC or a Mac because they're using Dropbox or Evernote or any number of other ways to do that. Josh Kennedy wrote in with a email about the gaming podcast that we did not too long ago and saying that we didn't talk about Microsoft X and simulators and flying things and Eurofly. That was a good bit of my Twitter at the beginning of 2017 as Sarah Aralani and others were doing that. And I learned a lot about that, but I don't think I could have summarized it very well. I'd actually have to bring someone on who does nothing but that. But you're right. We didn't cover that. We were just really
There's so many scratching games.
Yeah, just scratching. I mean, earlier we just had someone, you know, talking about the PS4 and doing things with racing games that, you know, we didn't know about until Jay wrote that article. So it's getting crazy with the number of things that are out there that you can do. So, but I'm glad you wrote that in and I'm glad you brought it that to our attention. We'll see about, seeing if we could dedicate some time to that. Cause I know there's a lot of people who are doing it and really enjoying it. I myself don't know that I would want to pretend to fly. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, you actually taxi a runway and take off and fly.
Yeah. Full flight with a screen reader. In real time. So if it's a 2 hour flight too, like you could actually do it the whole 2 hours and do it that way.
Yeah, real time, and I guess you could get up and do drink service. You know, you could make sure the cat and dog have
usually
water.
The pilot doesn't do that. That'd be
get some.
I mean, well, I know there's budget cutbacks.
Have you flown Spirit Airlines lately? I won't put it past them.
And then the pilot will now come through and serve your drinks.
Correct. Again, Spirit Airlines. I'm just saying, it's entirely possible. Cheapo air.
Yep.
Man, that brings us to the last word. Again, I want to thank Miss White for bringing this to my attention shortly after convention. With all the crazy things that have been happening between the storms, and you turn on the news and you hear about the world is ending any moment now, it gets really kind of depressing. So it's nice to turn to an account that brings a smile to your face. This is called Thoughts of Dog. And they're really cute little short tweets about what a dog thinks. Like, each day I grow bigger. I no longer fit on my dog bed. One foot hangs off. There can be only one. Or one of my other ones that I liked was the human snuggles the other human. I will find a way to fit between them. You know, they're just cute little things about what a dog thinks about. And it's really cute and really funny. And I found that it's brightened my day just to pull out of
they write this the little two word chunks too. They write this like little two word chunks. Yep. My friend fell asleep on me. His head is lying on my stomach, which makes me incredibly aware of my own breathing. This is at @dog_feelings on Twitter.
It's just gorgeous. And you don't have to have Twitter to enjoy this. You can actually just go to the page in the show note and just hit your headings and just read on down. It's really cute.
You know, I found this on Twitter, and I think you've probably heard this show.
Seeing AI. Double tap to open. Menu button. Take picture button. Take picture. Processing.
It is about being able to take our passions, our empathy, and go after the opportunities that we see, go after the dreams that we have. And what Saqib has done has been a real inspiration for me. And we as developers have this tremendous opportunity and a tremendous responsibility. Because not only do we get to dream of the future, we get to build the future. I can't wait to see what you dream of and what you build.
That's the you recognize the little the thing, right? It's Seeing AI.
Yeah.
The little
app from Satya Nadella, the head of Microsoft, sitting there talking about what he sees as the future.
That's the part I was trying to figure out is who that was.
That was Satcha. Yeah, no, I he is doing his futurist bit right there. I think it is fascinating and fantastic to have Microsoft so out in front. Way big Microsoft fanboy, as people know, but it is really nice to be able to point to things and say, look, this is what they're doing. Isn't this cool again? Rather than
very just cool.
For a long time, have a lot of
and then people jump out of this stuff, you know? So that was at Dragon1424 or Gorthalon on Twitter who did the remix of the Seeing AI Sounder.
Nice.
You know, I've heard people do this for mainstream stuff, and that's, there you go. Pretty well done. We'll link to their SoundCloud where this
just
is.
Just do some kind of mix with Tim Cook with his almost Star Trek-y way of speaking about the iPhone. Oh, geez. I'm still having flashbacks. Still. Oh, man. We've got so much more great stuff to talk about with Shelley next week. We'll talk about iPhone 8, 8 Plus, Apple Watch, tvOS, and whatever else seems to be on her mind. So we've got that coming up. At some point, we'll probably bring the film critic back in, and we'll talk about his picks for the summer of 2017. How well did he do? We'll go back through his list and see which ones were big box office draws and which ones were big box office bombs. And of course, we still have information about Google. Looks like there's a Pixel coming, a new Chrome device of some kind.
Home Mini.
Pixel Pen. A Google Home Mini?
Yeah, a Home Mini.
Wow.
Oh, and I heard yours go off. 9.9
miles. Okay, well, thank you. Surplus warehouse. Hey, Google. Hey, Google, cancel.
What did it think you were asking for?
I'm not sure what it thought I was asking for.
Lots more skills and things out there as well. I was just playing. There's a Diddy on Google Home now. So some of the Echo things have come over on Google Home as well. So, yes, Google event is October 4, I believe, 4th? Which is a Thursday. Yep. You know, it's a Thursday.
There's
so we'll
Microsoft
figure out.
Mixed reality event the day before.
But like I said before, Google's going to get a segment. Google's going to get a segment. This will be the next week, the third in a row Apple show.
So they got to find a way to break it in, right?
Yeah, this is kind of. But we want to hear your feedback.
The way it happens.
We want to hear your feedback on iOS 11, what you like, what you don't like, and everything else. App, or hey, if you're not at all Apple, that's fine. We want to hear your feedback as well. You can do feedback at blindbargains.com. You can comment on the shows over at blindbargains.com, or you can tweet us at blindbargains.
And you know, if it's going to be some type of major event, I'm going to probably say something about it on Twitter with my live commentary. I do it to all the companies. No matter who they are, they usually get some ironic thing said by me. And so it looks like I'll have lots of things to type about in the month of October. And of course, we still have a little bit more to go before we get to the holidays. So if you want something really interesting to see, like the show notes before they turn into show notes, head on over to twitter.com/rangerstation, all one word.
That's going to do it, folks. Thanks so much to Scott and Jamie for coming back on, or, you know, really coming back. We recorded it all a couple days ago, but hey, you know, hey. But thank you again.
Exactly. We had a lot to talk about. Had to break it into pieces. Also, thanks to Humanware for being our sponsor for this particular episode. You know, some of the companies wonder if they're going to land on the week of Apple versus, you know, Google event or Microsoft event. Looks like both companies that sponsored this show actually got an Apple event. So, hey, look at that.
So much Apple to go around. Gotta love it. Thanks so much to Patrick, of course, for putting all this together as well. So we really do appreciate all of you. And thanks, of course, to all of you for listening to the Blind Bargains Cast. We'll hope to see you again next week with Shelley and much more. But that's going to do it. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for rating us. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2017.